doesn't happen very often. His gaze travelled around the kitchen as he munched on a huge mouthful of toast. He shrugged, spraying crumbs across the table. What? Something tightened inside me suddenly, and I drew a deep breath. It was a bad idea to mention the Black Moon to Edwin. What if he said something to Dominic at the weekend? I didn't want Dominic to think I was dwelling on what we'd done that evening, or worse, to think I was talking to Edwin about it. Oh, just look outside. It's a proper summer's day at last. I think we should walk into the village and buy some sweets. What do you think? Edwin nodded, dropping his last crust onto his plate. Can we go to the play park? Of course. And look through the fence? See if Joel's there? A few weeks earlier, we had stood outside the preschool field, watching the children participating in a sports day with their sacks and hula hoops and sit-on bouncy balls. Yep, we can do that too. Ruth preferred to rest at home, so Edwin and I set off together. The sickly smell from the rapeseed fields had faded now that most of it had been harvested, and the scent of lavender from the front gardens of the Flint cottages stayed with us all the way into the village. As the village green came into sight, Edwin and I spotted the low yellow car at the same time. Hey, isn't that... Edwin tugged on my hand, pointing. I stared. It was almost 8 months since we'd last seen that yellow car at Summerbourne. 8 months is a long time for a child who's not yet five. But Edwin liked cars, and Edwin liked Alex. It's Uncle Alex's car, Edwin shouted. I felt like a clockwork figure, as though someone had wound me up with a key months ago, kept hold of it tightly until this precise moment, and then let go. Whirring cogs drove my heart in a thud, thud, thud rhythm. All I could think was, has he missed me? Has he missed me? Edwin and I looked up and down the street and across the green, but Alex was nowhere in sight. The shop, Laura! Edwin tugged on my hand. The bell jingled as we pushed the door open, warm bread and coffee smells greeting us. And there he was, down at the far end of the right-hand aisle, the top of his hair just visible over the rows of tins. My clockwork heart kept drumming. Edwin trotted down the middle aisle, and then there was a squeal of delight and an exclamation of surprise, and Alex was walking toward me, his arms outstretched.
Laura!
He kissed me on each cheek. His skin smelled of soap and limes. His hair was shorter.
Laura said something special was going to happen today, Edwin said. She knew!
Oh, really?
Alex smiled at me, and I pulled a face as if to say, yes, maybe I did know. Edwin bounced around him.
Laura only lets me get two things, Uncle Alex, but I really, really want a chocolate egg as well.
Alex assumed a sympathetic expression, but said to Edwin,
I think Laura knows what she's talking about. Come on, choose your two things, and we can go and sit in the sunshine, and you can tell me everything you've been up to since I last saw you.
He held my elbow lightly as we crossed the street outside the shop, Edwin holding my hand on the other side.
So, how are you doing?
He asked, slowing down by the bench and frowning at me slightly. I'm fine. Great, I said.
They're looking after you properly up there.
I checked his expression, but found no trace of humour. I'm the one looking after Edwin, remember?
Yeah,
he said.
I know. So how's Ruth?
My clockwork jumped to a halt. How could I have forgotten about Ruth and the baby? Or more precisely, his connection to Ruth and the baby. I bit the inside of my lip. Of course he didn't miss me. I was pathetic. Edwin ran off to play, and I sank onto the bench, and after a moment, Alex perched next to me, watching me. She's all right, I said. I glanced at him. Did he know?
Good,
he said, nodding with raised eyebrows as if waiting for more. But I leaned back and focused my attention on Edwin, who was climbing the steps of the slide.
And Dominic?
He asked. Yep, he's fine. I waited 4 or 5 seconds. They're excited about the baby, of course.
Baby?
Alex swiveled round, his knee bumping mine.
She's pregnant?
I nodded.
Bloody hell.
He leaned back and ran a hand over his face.
Sorry,
he added.
I mean, that's great. One baby, or?
Yes, just one.
Good, okay.
He sat back again.
How far along is she?
Quite far, I said. I waved to Edwin at the top of the slide. She's due in August. End of August. He kept his gaze on the houses at the far side of the green. An elderly man walked past us, a small terrier dragging behind on its lead. A cold sensation was spreading through my chest, and suddenly I couldn't bear to sit there any longer. We should be getting back. I stood and beckoned to Edwin. Alex rose too.
Do you think?
He said. I waited.
Do you think Ruth would mind if I walked back with you?
I glanced at Edwin. I think you probably should ring her first, I said. He nodded rapidly.
Yeah, okay, good idea. I'll do that.
Bye, Uncle Alex,
Edwin said, squinting up at him. Alex ruffled his hair.
Bye, Edwin. Say hi to your mama for me.
As we walked away, he added,
good to see you both.
We paused briefly outside the preschool for Edwin to say hello to Joel and Ralph through the fence. They were being called inside for story time. Edwin complained at me all the way home.
You didn't let me play long enough. You didn't let me have a chocolate egg. You didn't let Alex come home with us.
The sun was too hot for my long-sleeved shirt, and my skin itched. Any thoughts I might have had about avoiding the subject of Alex when we got back to Summerbourne were instantly quashed by Edwin yelling,
"Guess who we saw!"
as he leaped onto Ruth's prone figure on the sofa. She needed a glass of water before she was able to speak properly. "How did he look?" she asked me, and then before I could answer, "I don't want to see him." When the phone rang that evening, I heard her saying, "I just don't think it's a good idea," in a low voice as I ushered Edwin upstairs. Feeling childish, I crossed my fingers under Edwin's towel as I watched the water run into his bath. If Alex went back to Leeds for good, it would leave me with one less thing to worry about. Alex's name wasn't mentioned for the rest of the week, nor over the weekend. Dominic took Ruth and Edwin out for Sunday lunch at the pub in the village, leaving me to enjoy a luxurious nap on the patio. On the following Monday afternoon, I was on the phone to Vera when I spotted a figure lurking near the end of the drive in the lane. Vera was reeling off a list of symptoms, wanting me to say whether Ruth was suffering with them or not. She hasn't mentioned anything like that, I said. Hold on, please, Vera. I think there's someone outside. I rested the receiver on the table and went to peer through the window. It was Alex, his hands in his pockets, staring at the house.
Vera, sorry. No one there. Yes, she'll probably be up before tea time. I'll get her to ring you. Bye.
When I opened the front door, he shuffled up the gravel, glancing at the other windows, looking like he was trying not to make too much noise.
What are you doing here? I asked, frowning at him.
I have to talk to you, Laura. Please.
His hair was unkempt, his eyes restless. I shook my head.
You can't come in, and I have Edwin and Joel here. I can't come out.
Please, just...
He caught hold of my fingers, held on to them, his eyes pleading.
Please tell me, Laura. Is there something I need to know about this pregnancy?
I should have snatched my hand away immediately. I should have closed the door on him and walked away.
There is, isn't there?
He asked. With me up on the doorstep and him hunched on the gravel, I was slightly taller than him. I pulled my hand free, but I hesitated. Laughter from Edwin and Joel drifted out from the day nursery. I thought about Alex's unborn child upstairs, biding its time, growing and stretching, and waiting to be born. "I can't tell you," I whispered. He stared at me for a long moment.
"It's my baby, isn't it?"
he said. I pressed my lips together. I wasn't sure whether it was him swaying or me. He leaned closer, his hand once more reaching for mine.
"Laura, tell me."
I held my breath, his fingers wrapped around mine. I nodded. He stumbled backward then, letting go of me. I expected him to show anger, or distress, or some other kind of negative emotion. But elation seemed to rise inside him, and he drew himself up, his chest inflating, his eyes shining. I slumped in the doorway. I was no longer taller than him.
"I need to see her," he said. "I need to talk to her."
"No," I tried to close the door, but he put one foot up onto the threshold and stopped me.
"I need to talk to Ruth."
His voice was louder. A creak of floorboards above pushed my heart rate higher. Edwin and Joel appeared in the kitchen doorway, and Edwin stepped forward hesitantly when he saw who the visitor was.
"Uncle Alex, why are you shouting?"
Alex's eyes clouded for a moment, and he stepped back uncertainly. I slammed the door and yanked the bolt across the top. "Pass me the keys, Edwin," I said. Edwin's eyes were wide, but he did as I asked. A floorboard creaked again, and I heard Ruth's bedroom door open. The gravel crunched outside, and from the window I watched Alex march away toward the lane, his hands raking through his hair as he went. I ushered the boys back into the kitchen as Ruth plodded down the stairs. Her hands supported her bump, and she had a line down one cheek from a crease in her pillow. "Who was that?" she asked. "Alex. What did he want?" I steeled myself to maintain eye contact. "He wanted to know if..." The boys were chattering quietly in the kitchen, but I was unable to form the words. I looked at her bump. She sank down on the steps, her face a ghastly white. "What did you say?" she asked. I shook my head, my hands making a hopeless gesture. "You told him. You told him, didn't you?" I closed my eyes, holding on to the doorframe. Ruth wrapped her arms around her abdomen and rocked back and forth. "What have you done?" she said. "I'm sorry. He asked me outright. I couldn't lie." Her gaze was unfocused as she rocked, and I'm not sure she even heard me. "What have I done?" she said. "What am I going to do?"
23. Seraphine. The police arrive while Edwin and Joel are still upstairs. Martin Larch and a younger officer I don't recognise. Danny introduces Kiara to Martin, and Martin gives her a searching look and then glances at me.
"I knew your father a long time ago," Martin says to Kiara. "And he knew the lady who has just been assaulted. I'm rather interested to know why you happen to be here today."
Kiara is jittery. "I have no idea what's going on," she says. And Danny puts a hand on her arm the same way he does to me when I'm upset. Edwin and Joel clatter down the stairs.
"You're the one who found Miss Silveira, Dr. Harris?"
Martin asks Joel. Joel says,
"Yes."
He's had a shower and is wearing some of Edwin's clothes. I examine him in brief glances, searching for an indication of guilt or innocence, not wanting to meet his eyes.
"It might have been better if you'd waited before washing," Martin remarks. "Could you bring your clothes, please?"
Edwin starts to protest, but Joel waves a hand. "It's fine. I'm sorry, I didn't think. I'll go and get them. The young police constable accompanies Joel back upstairs. Martin looks at each of us in turn.
Well, this is a bit of a mystery, he says. I don't suppose any of you know what Miss Silveira was doing here today, or who might have bashed her over the head. Anything you'd like to tell me?
I wait for one of the others to say, It's Seraphine's fault. Someone warned Laura not to talk about Summerbourne, but Seraphine wouldn't stop asking questions. I can't tell Martin that Laura had a note from Edwin luring her here, even though I know Laura might be telling that to a police officer at the hospital at this very moment. And I'm afraid that if I tell Martin anything else, he will tug on it until he unspools all the events of the past 10 days, and then he too will look at Edwin and Joel with suspicion. There must be another explanation. Martin watches us, and we stand in silence. As the seconds tick by, a conviction grows in me. The signature at the bottom of that note isn't Edwin's. Whoever sent it had to have known about Laura's fondness for Edwin all those years ago and used that to lure her to the isolated clifftop. I roll my shoulders back. We stand in silence. We shake our heads. In the end, Martin questions Joel first, and then the rest of us. And as we account for our movements during the day, I have a strong mental image of Martin placidly absorbing each detail into his elephantine memory.
How did you meet Miss Kaimal? Martin asks me. Why did you invite her here for lunch today?
In the air between us hangs the unspoken ending of his sentence. Today of all days. I found out about Alex when I was going through my dad's things after the funeral, I tell him. I met him. I thought it would be nice to spend some time with Kiara. Martin's expression doesn't change. He looks at Kiara, then at Danny, then back at me. Joel's story is that he'd gone to the cliffs to look for Michael, who had failed to return from a walk, and he spotted Laura collapsed at the base of the tower. In his medical opinion, he thinks she'd only just been hit. A team of police officers are already out on the cliffs, examining the site of Laura's attack, and Martin alerts them to Michael's latest disappearance. Of course, Martin and the Harrises have known each other their whole lives, and I can see the sympathy on Martin's face as he makes the call. His colleagues on the cliffs report no sign of the old man.
I likely need to talk to you all again in the morning, Martin says before leaving. Better you stay here, Miss Kaimal, please, just until we know how Miss Silveira is doing.
Kiara is visibly distressed.
I need to phone Dad,
she says as soon as the police car has gone. Edwin, Danny and I retreat to the day nursery to give her some privacy to make her call.
Shit,
Danny says, throwing himself on one of the sofas. What the hell was all that about? Why did Laura come here and why today? What kind of maniac did that to her?
I've brought my bag through and I pull Laura's note out slowly and hand it to Edwin. Laura dropped this. Edwin opens it, reads it, his mouth falling open.
I didn't write this,
he says, staring at the letter and then at me.
This isn't from me.
He passes it to Danny, his eyes still on me. I step toward him and take both his hands in mine. His feel cold. I know, I say. I believe you. But who did? Edwin shakes his head.
Joel?
I whisper.
No.
Edwin snatches his hands from mine and strides over to the window, keeping his back to me, his shoulders hunched. The contents of his treasure box are still strewn across the table, and, unable to settle and unwilling to break the silence, I collect them together distractedly and pack them all back inside. I join Danny on the sofa then, curling up at the far end, wrapping my arms around my knees. My mind keeps returning to Joel no matter how hard I tried to stop it. Joel, who knew I had been asking questions about the day I was born. Joel, who had access to Michael's key to Summerborn. Joel, who knew that Ralph had a propane torch in his van and could have borrowed it. Joel, who was free to wander up to the Folly in the middle of the day at the exact same time that Laura happened to be there. I squeeze my eyes shut. I'm worried I might be sick. Edwin's phone beeps from the kitchen and he goes through to fetch it.
Joel's found Michael, back at the cottage,
he says as he walks back in. I don't open my eyes. Who's to say Michael wasn't there all along? Kiara appears then, eyeing us as if we're dangerous strangers, the camaraderie of our lunch together all but forgotten. My dad's on his way, she says. We acknowledge this with nods, watching her. She moves slowly toward the table, where Edwin's treasure box sits, its lid now closed. I wish I'd never come, she says quietly.
You can stay in the annex, Edwin says. With your dad, tonight, I'll show you.
But when he goes to turn the handle, he finds the door locked. I hid the key, I say. Yet again, they all look at me wordlessly. I stalk out to retrieve it from the kitchen and hand it to Edwin without further comment. Back on the sofa, I listen as Edwin opens windows in the annex, making small talk. I can barely hear Kiara's muted replies. I leap up again. I'll get fresh bedding, I tell Danny. Later, when we've made up the bed and laid sheets and blankets out on the annex sofa, we have cold drinks on the patio, and it surprises me how relieved I am to see that Kiara has regained some composure. Eventually, Edwin heads into the kitchen to set about making an evening meal. I am unsettled, jumpy. I half expect the phone to ring at any moment, announcing that Laura has remembered who attacked her. Not Joel. Please, don't let it be Joel. As we finish our supper, a car pulls up on the gravel and Edwin opens the door to Alex. Kiara throws herself into his arms. He looks older than when I saw him a few days ago. His face taut, his eyes taking in each of us in turn as if we are the enemy.
I'm Edwin, sir, Edwin says to him. Do you remember me? I believe I used to call you Uncle Alex.
Alex's face crumples slightly, and he holds Kiara at arm's length to check that she really is all right, and then says to Edwin,
Yes, I remember you very well, Edwin. I was hoping I'd never have to talk to you about what happened back then, but...
He sighs.
I do see Kiara's point, that she has the right to know where she comes from.
He looks at his daughter and then back to Edwin.
Kiara told me about Dominic, your dad. I'm very sorry. But has Laura really been attacked? What was she doing here? What happened?
We don't know yet, I say, watching him, watching the shifting of his facial expressions, searching for any signs of guilt. I'm wondering how we can be sure that it wasn't him up on the cliffs today, lying in wait for Laura. He stares back at me.
Who are you again?
He says.
I mean, who are you really?
I take a step back, bumping into Danny. This is basically the same question that Michael asked me 3 days ago.
Where did you really come from, my dear?
In one form or another, it's the same question people have been asking me my whole life. What is it about me that makes me such a puzzle? Edwin clears his throat.
This is Seraphine, my sister, he tells Alex, and Danny, my brother. They're twins. Alex gives a strange bark of a laugh. The three of us stand very still.
Who's twins?
He asks eventually.
Ruth and Dominic's,
Edwin says with authority, and then his eyes dart toward us and his brow creases.
Or at least...
What did you mean just now?
Danny says.
That Kiara has the right to know where she comes from? Kiara glances at Danny and back to Alex.
Dad?
Alex is shaking his head now, backing away from us toward the front door, pulling Kiara with him.
I can't do this. I'm sorry, we need to go.
Kiara pulls her arm from his grip and moves back to stand with us.
Dad, the police said I have to stay here tonight. Please, just tell me whatever it is. It's not going to go away now.
Alex's shoulders sag. In the end, we all move into the sitting room, and Alex and Kiara take one sofa, while Edwin, Danny and I sit in a line opposite them. Alex refuses any refreshments. He's grim-faced, but Kiara holds his hand, and I have a strong feeling he is replaying an event in his mind as he gazes up at the ceiling behind our heads. Eventually, he looks down and focuses on the pile of books on the coffee table between us instead.
Your mother and I.
He clears his throat and starts again.
I was in love with Ruth.
From when I first met her. Before she married your father, and afterward. I won't try to justify what we did.
He shakes his head, glances up at us briefly.
We had an affair. I'm sorry.
I'm sitting in between my brothers, and each of my hands creeps into one of theirs.
She became pregnant,
Alex says, with my child. A chill slides down my spine. I hold my brother's hands tighter. Alex looks at Kiara.
When she had you during her pregnancy with you and after your birth, she was very unstable, mentally unstable, dangerous. I couldn't leave you with her, how could I? I came to see you, to meet you on the day you were born, and Ruth wasn't even here. She'd left you already.
You were perfect, Kiara. So, so beautiful. I took you home with me.
To keep you safe. I had no choice.
I am barely breathing. Kiara was Ruth's daughter. Kiara was the baby in the photograph.
Kiara is the person I thought I was. So, who am I? And who is Danny?
Kiara stares at Alex, tears sliding down her cheeks.
She was my mother, she says. You took me from her. She killed herself because of you.
No,
Alex tells her.
I didn't know she was going to do that. I had to put your safety first, Kiara. Dominic was never here. If he'd been here when I came to see you, even maybe I wouldn't have taken you. We could have sorted out a custody arrangement. If I'd been certain you were going to be safe. But I didn't take you on a whim. It wasn't like that. I'd planned it all. I hired a private midwife to help look after you in the early days. I bought all the equipment you needed. Formula milk, clothes, nappies. I even changed my car so it would be safer for you. I wanted you so much.
So much that you kidnapped her,
Edwin says. I've never heard his voice so cold. Alex draws in a deep breath.
It wasn't kidnap, I told you. I found her alone in the house with the au pair. Both Ruth and Dominic had gone out somewhere, left her already. She was hungry. I told Laura to tell Ruth and Dominic to phone me when they got back. We'd discuss it, come to some arrangement. I did want to be the primary parent, yes, of course, but I would never have stopped a mother from seeing her.
You told Laura?
Edwin asks.
Yes, Laura, the au pair. She'd been left here looking after the baby all by herself.
Alex turns back to Kiara.
You were a few hours old. And they'd already left you with the teenage help. I said to Laura, get them to ring me, we'll talk. But they never rang. I had a little cottage here in the village then. I'd been trying to sell it, but when I found out Ruth was pregnant with you, I thought it could be a good base for us in the early days. I set up a nursery there, got everything ready. The midwife and I took you back there. But of course that evening I heard what Ruth had done.
Edwin lets go of my hand, and I think he's wiping away tears. But then he lurches forward and snarls at Alex across the coffee table.
What's she done because of you?
Alex gives him an agonised look.
No! No! I never wanted that!
Kiara hunches over, burying her face in her hands. Alex looks from her shaking shoulders to Edwin, and the battle to keep control of his emotions rages on his face.
I still thought Dominic would ring, he says eventually. Once the shock of Ruth's death had worn off, I took you back to Leeds the next day, Kiara. I didn't speak to anyone in the village. We just left. Dominic knew my number in Leeds. For months, every time the phone rang, I thought it was going to be him, but it never was. I thought he must have found out you weren't his. He must have decided he didn't want you. So I sold the cottage in the village. I never talked to anyone about any of it. I never mentioned the name Summerbourne again. My throat hurts. I take a deep breath. What else happened? I don't understand. If Kiara was the baby Ruth had that day, then... I look at Danny. Who are we? Alex really scrutinises me then. My hair, my face, my body. He barely looks at Danny. It's odd. An expression passes across his face fleetingly, a widening of his pupils and a flaring of his nostrils. He looks away and then he shakes his head.
I really am sorry if the things I did affected you, he says, his eyes still averted. I would help you if I could. But I honestly... I'm sorry. I have absolutely no idea who you are.
24. Laura. July 1992. The day after I confirmed Alex's suspicion that the baby was his... He delivered a letter to Summerbourne. I hid behind the kitchen door, holding my breath, as he pushed it through the letterbox. Once his car had roared off down the lane, I carried the envelope up to Ruth, and she made no attempt to hide its contents.
Dear Ruth, I appreciate this has not worked out the way we might have chosen, but I am delighted about the baby, and I fully intend to play an active role as his or her father. Please can we arrange to meet to discuss how we are going to sort out visits in the early days and a longer-term shared custody plan, etc. I am happy to meet with both you and Dominic together, if you prefer. I feel confident we can come to an amicable arrangement. With all best wishes, Alex.
She stared into the distance for a long time and then tore the paper into tiny pieces and burned them in the fireplace. Two more letters came that week, and he rang the house every day. After a while, neither Ruth nor I would answer the phone, and then on the Friday, we had an anxious Vera arrive in a taxi unexpectedly, concerned because she had been unable to make contact. Ruth gave her lunch and sent her away again, adamant that she didn't want visitors in the house. Vera squeezed my hands just before she climbed into the taxi. Ring me, anytime, day or night, and look after her, please. I nodded. Alex stayed away over the weekend. Dominic came home with a trunkload of disposable nappies and a bassinet for the day nursery, as well as a home birth kit in a canvas bag. Ruth kissed him when he carried them in. He took Edwin out all day on the Saturday, and gave no indication that he was aware of Alex's return to the village.
What's the matter with her now?
He asked me while he peeled potatoes for Sunday lunch. Just tired, I think. I made a sandwich and retreated to my annex, leaving them to it. Michael had warned us a heatwave was coming, and sure enough, the air was already heavy and warm when we woke up on the Monday morning. Dominic had left at 6 o'clock for London, and by 9 o'clock, Ruth and I were sitting in the shades on the patio, watching Edwin play in his paddling pool on the lawn. Ruth was still in her nightshirt, and she pressed her hand to her bump and groaned. I was quite enjoying being able to drink tea again, but I think the caffeine's woken it up, she said. Ouch. She didn't show any reaction to the sound of a car pulling up on the drive, and I followed her example and ignored the doorbell. We kept our eyes fixed on Edwin, straining our ears for the sound of an engine starting up again. But Alex was determined that day. He must have climbed over the wall by the stable block. We whipped our heads round when he appeared from that direction, and he strode up the path toward us. His lips were pressed into a smile, but his fingers were curled. Ruth rose and pointed at him. Get out! Get away from my house! Edwin stood in his pool, dripping, staring from one to the other.
We need to talk, Alex said.
His tone was calm, but the tension in his face suggested this took effort. Ruth turned toward me. Phone the police, Laura. Tell them someone's broken into my property.
Your mother's property?
Alex gave a short laugh.
I wonder if she'll press charges when the police explain to her that I'm the father of her grandchild.
Mummy,
Edwin said. I knocked Alex's elbow as I pushed past him, a towel in my hand.
Hey,
I said to Edwin, draping the towel around his shoulders.
Should we get some ice cream and watch a video? But I want to play here.
His bottom lip protruded.
We can put chocolate sauce on it, I said.
He slid his hand into mine. Ruth continued to glare at Alex. I took Edwin straight through to the day nursery and settled him in front of the television, his trunks spreading a damp patch onto the sofa.
I'll be back in a minute, I told him. I'll put lots of chocolate sauce and sprinkles on. Just stay here, okay?
Straight from the freezer, the ice cream was too solid to scoop out. I placed two bowls on the countertop, then hovered by the kitchen table, watching Ruth and Alex through the open doors. Ruth still stood on the patio, her hands held protectively over her bump, while Alex was several meters back on the lawn, his feet apart and his hands in his pockets.
You haven't told him, have you?
Alex was saying.
I can't believe you're this close to your due date and you haven't told him yet.
I'm not due for another 5 weeks, Ruth said coldly, and it's not yours. Alex tilted his head back and squinted at the sky.
For God's sake, if you won't talk to him, I will. I know this is going to be hard for you, but the baby is mine.
You're wrong.
I'm the father. I'm not going to let you cut me out.
I'll tell Dominic you're threatening me. You're making it up. You're deluded. Alex shook his head.
I'm not the deluded one, Ruth.
She stepped off the patio and advanced on him, one finger jabbing toward his chest. Her voice dropped, and I crept closer to the doorway, holding my breath. If you don't leave right now, she said, I will take myself and my baby to a place you will never find us. Her finger was an inch from his shirt. He stepped back, raising one hand slightly as if to ward her off.
What are you talking about?
You know exactly what I'm talking about. He stared at her.
No, Ruth, I don't.
She made a shrill sound, almost a laugh, and stepped to the side, moving around him, swiveling to keep her finger pointed at him.
It's your choice, Alex. You can accept that this is nothing to do with you. Watch this baby grow up like you've watched Edwin as a family friend. But if you push me, if you threaten me, I will go, and I'll take my baby with me.
She swung round then, as fast as her distended abdomen would let her, and set off for the end of the garden with a rolling gait.
What do you mean? Alex called after her. Ruth, where are you going?
Her mouth twisted into a distorted smile as she looked back at him over her shoulder.
To the cliffs, she shouted.
Something clattered at my feet, and I looked down, my heart racing. A black-handled knife spun on the tiles, knocked from the draining board. Alex took two steps toward Ruth's retreating figure, then stopped. He raked his fingers through his hair. I stumbled over to the ice cream container and scooped out two portions with trembling hands. When I got back to the day nursery, Edwin was absorbed in his cartoon and didn't look up. I fumbled as I placed the sauce bottle on the nursery table, and the sprinkles pot went flying, sending hundreds and thousands of multicolored sprinkles skittering across the floor. Had Ruth really just threatened to kill herself and her unborn child? Perhaps I had misunderstood. Perhaps her words had meant something different to Alex. A column of scalding acid rose in my chest, and I bent over the table, gripping the edges.
Laura?
I swung round, trying to straighten but failing. Alex stood in the day nursery doorway, a hand on each side of the doorframe, as if it was holding him up. Sweat shone on his forehead, and his face had a greyish tinge.
Did you hear what she said?
He asked me. I managed to straighten up properly. I nodded. Our eyes didn't quite meet. Edwin continued to gaze at his screen.
You've got to help me.
Alex's voice cracked.
The baby isn't safe with her. She's gone to the cliffs. You've got to get her back.
I gestured to Edwin. I can't. I can't leave him here alone.
If I follow her, I'm afraid of what she'll do. I'll stay here and watch him.
I stared at him. He exhaled heavily.
You don't trust me.
No, I said. It's not that.
What then?
I have to stay with him. Despite me not using his name, Edwin's concentration broke suddenly, and he knelt up to peer over the back of the sofa, frowning at us.
Where's Mummy?
He asked. She'll be back soon, I told him. I held my hand against his cheek for a moment, stroking it with my thumb. Once he'd settled back down, I forced my legs to propel me to the doorway until I stood directly in front of Alex. His pupils were wide, his breathing rapid. Go home, I told him. She'll come back once you've gone.
Laura,
just go! You've done enough. He left. Within minutes of his car retreating down the lane, Ruth appeared from the direction of the stable block. I guessed she hadn't gone to the cliffs at all, but had circled within the boundary of the garden to listen for his car leaving. Are you all right? I asked her. She held out her arms as Edwin scrambled off the sofa and scurried into them. I'm great, she said. I'm starving, actually. I think six small meals a day are the way forward at the moment. Who's for pancakes? We gobbled them with golden syrup and lemon juice, out on the patio, gorging ourselves until our chins were sticky and our stomachs bloated. Then we sprawled on the cushions in the shade, sucking sugar from our fingers and dozing, resembling nothing more than a pack of wild animals, sated after a successful kill.
25. Seraphine. Edwin avoids being in the same room as Alex for the rest of the evening, and Danny goes off to phone Brooke, so it falls to me to show Alex and Kiara to the annex and hand them the key in case they feel the need to lock themselves in. They do. I hear the lock click before I've even crossed the day nursery. Back in the kitchen, I consider these strangers we have allowed into our house. I have warmed to Kiara, but something about Alex troubles me. I bolt the door on the kitchen side, blocking their access to the main part of the house overnight. Suspicion works both ways. Upstairs, Edwin has just come off the phone to Vera.
I told her Laura had been found here, injured, he says. But I didn't mention Alex and Kiara and everything else. Not yet. It's too complicated. She's going to come down tomorrow, and she wants you to go back with her, Seth. Please do. Let her look after you for a couple of weeks. Okay. I step forward and rest my forehead against his chest for a minute,
His heart rate is fast, I think, or my perception of time is skewed. I've grown up with the expectation that my big brother can always make things better. But he can't this time. He's not even my big brother this time. He's her big brother. I want to talk to him about that, but I don't know what to say. He seems distracted, distant. But as I pull away, he murmurs, "I don't care who your parents are, you know. You'll always be my sister." I hold back my tears until I'm in my bedroom. It's too hot for bed covers, but I curl up in the middle of my mattress, my head tucked toward my knees, like a defensive creature trying to deter predators, trying to shut out the world. Will Vera still want me to go back to London with her when she finds out I'm not her real granddaughter? Will she end up giving Summerbourne to Kiara? This is all my fault. If I'd stayed away from Laura, never met Alex and Kiara, I could be mourning my father properly now, with the support of my brothers. Instead, I've discovered that Edwin isn't my brother at all, and I've no idea whether Danny is either. Does this story have to come out? Do we need to tell people? Will Kiara want to meet her grandmother, claim her inheritance, keep her newfound older brother to herself? The worst thing of all is, I have lost the certainty of my family without gaining the truth I was seeking. No one knows where Danny and I came from. I still don't know who I am. I wake early and tiptoe down to the kitchen to pull the bolt back before making 3 coffees and carrying them up to Edwin and Danny. Alex and Kiara can fend for themselves. Danny is still in bed when the police car arrives a couple of hours later, but the rest of us congregate in the sitting room to hear Martin's news, none of us wanting to be the first to sit down. Martin watches Alex as he enters.
"I suppose you can vouch for your whereabouts around noon yesterday, Mr. Kaimal?"
"Headingley Golf Club," Alex says.
Martin's lips twitch, and his colleague jots something down in her notebook. I pull the note from my pocket then, the note that Laura dropped, and I hand it to Martin.
"Laura dropped this yesterday. It's not Edwin's signature. He didn't write it."
Martin studies it and then frowns at me. He waits for his colleague to produce a clear plastic evidence bag and drops the note into it before he says,
"And you didn't give this to me yesterday because..."
I blink down at the rug and shuffle my feet. "I'm sorry," I mumble. Martin murmurs to his colleague and she leaves the room, taking the note in its bag with her. Then he tells us that Laura is recovering well, but didn't see who attacked her.
"It appears the attacker used a sizable stone from the parapet wall at the top of the tower," he tells us. "Some of the stones up there are quite loose. We believe the attacker dropped the stone onto Miss Silveira from above. It caught the side of her head. Another inch to the centre and the result could have been much worse."
"When can she leave the hospital?"
Edwin asks.
"This morning,"
Martin says.
"They're discharging her as we speak. She was rather hoping to see some of you again before she goes home, so I wondered whether a couple of you might be happy to go and collect her."
Edwin and I exchange glances.
"So you don't think any of us are a risk to her, then?" Edwin asks.
"Our information points elsewhere," Martin says evenly.
"Seraphine and I will pick her up then," Edwin says.
He doesn't so much as glance at Alex. Once Martin and his colleague have left, Kiara and Alex argue over whether to leave immediately or to stay and see Laura.
"She was there when I was born, Dad," Kiara says. "If Edwin doesn't mind bringing her here first, I'd really like to meet her."
Edwin makes no comment to this, but when he and I arrive at the hospital, he puts a hand on my arm before I climb out of the car.
Wait, I'm not sure about this.
I frown at him.
She's expecting us now. We can't just leave her here.
No, I mean, I'm not sure about asking her questions. We could just... I just think we need to be certain we want to hear it before we ask her.
I think about the lipstick message on my mirror and the blood trickling down Laura's face and neck, the dead bird on my doorstep, the anonymous letter in the trash bin.
Because we might not like the answers?
I shake Edwin's hand off and rub my temples.
Or because whoever attacked Laura might do the same to us?
Edwin's forehead is furrowed.
I don't know. I have a bad feeling about all this.
You think we're in danger?
He holds his palms up.
I don't know. It sounds crazy, but maybe I should just take her straight back to London, and you get a taxi home, and I'll tell her I don't want to hear anything in the car.
I watch him. Or we could both drive her back to London. He gives a small smile.
Yes, of course. Or you drive her back, Seraphine, and I'll get a taxi home. I'm not hiding anything here, you know. I just want to...
He pinches the bridge of his nose suddenly, squeezing his eyes shut.
That note wasn't from me. I swear, I just want to protect you. Protect all of us.
We sit in silence while a couple unlock their car in the space next to ours and climb in, adjusting their sun visors and fussing over seatbelts before they eventually reverse away. I lean over and press my forehead against Edwin's shoulder.
I know, I say.
Another car begins to manoeuvre into the vacated space, exhaust fumes billowing behind it. My hands feel damp and I glance at them with a sudden fear that they're covered in blood.
Stop asking questions. We should stop.
I should stop. Edwin's right. We should walk away from all of this before it's too late. Before more damage is done that we might never recover from.
I straighten and look at him.
But I think we have to ask her, Edwin. Don't you? How else are we ever going to put this behind us?
Laura waits for us on a bench outside the accident and emergency department, looking vastly better than yesterday, with a neat bandage around her head and a sharp glint in her eyes.
Are we stopping off at Summerbourne first?
She asks as Edwin holds the rear car door open for her. He glances at me and back to her, his jaw tense.
Would you like to?
A quick cup of tea, maybe, before we take you home? Laura nods decisively.
I'd like that.
I join her on the back seat and turn to her as Edwin starts the engine. An image of her head wound hovers in my mind, and it's an effort not to stare at her bandage.
I feel responsible for dragging you into this, I say. I'm sorry.
It was me who rang you at work last week, and, pretended to have a delivery for you. She looks at me calmly.
I guess that, Seraphine, after you pounced on me outside my flat. How did you recognise me that day? You said you knew who I was.
She sighs. I've looked you up online, you know, over the years.
Because you were there at my birth?
Yes. Her gaze remains steady.
You know the threatening letter you got that day was nothing to do with me. And Edwin didn't write the note asking you to meet him at the Folly,
I say. Her eyes widen.
I realise someone tricked me to get me to the Folly. I know Edwin would never hurt me.
I didn't mention the note to the police. I told Martin I'd heard about... She hesitates and gives me an anguished look.
I told him I'd heard the news about Dominic, and I just fancied a trip to the beach to reminisce, to say goodbye.
She frowns.
But how?
Don't tell me you fished that nasty letter out of the trash bin in the park. I nod, looking down.
I'm sorry,
Did you tell the police about that? Edwin asks her from the front.
No,
she says, and then she turns her head and watches the scenery out the window for a while. Do you have any idea who attacked you? I ask, but she presses her lips together. She shakes her head and her fingers creep up to the locket at her collarbone. I want to ask her about her daughter, the one mentioned in the anonymous letter. I want to tell her that I know Alex took Ruth's baby and ask her whether she knows that he never returned her, the original Seraphine, whom he renamed Kiara. Most of all, I want to ask her whether she knows who I really am, who Danny and I really are. Where did we come from? But her closed expression makes me hesitate. Perhaps when we're sitting with a cup of tea on the patio at Summerbourne. Alex and Kiara might still be at the house when we get back, I say softly, and her eyes widen, but she passes the rest of the journey in silence. As we leave the village behind us and make our way down the lane towards Summerbourne, Laura sits up, taller. Are you okay? I ask. She nods. A police car is pulled over on the grass just before the cottages, and as we approach Michael's home, we see Martin leaning on the gate, speaking into his phone. Inside the little front garden, Joel faces him. Martin raises a hand in casual greeting as we pass, but Edwin doesn't slow the car. My eyes meet Joel's for a split second through my window. He doesn't smile. Danny opens the front door as we pull up onto the drive. Edwin helps Laura out of the car, and she looks frailer here in the Summerbourne sunshine than she did back at the hospital, her bandage glaringly white against the waxy sheen of her skin.
Gran's here, and she's furious,
Danny says in a hushed tone as he approaches.
Why?
Edwin asks.
Because of her.
Danny indicates Laura and then flashes her a small apologetic grimace.
Sorry, but I think it'd be better if you just left now, Edwin. Take her home straight away.
Laura hasn't taken her eyes off Danny.
No,
I say.
She's coming in. She's welcome here. We need to sit down and talk.
Danny looks from Edwin to me and back again, hesitating. Then Vera appears in the doorway. Her lips are pulled back over her teeth. Her shoulders are drawn up under her ears. For a moment, I'm concerned that she's ill in some way, and I glance at Edwin, expecting him to rush to her aid, but he's rooted to the spot. She stalks toward us, one stiff step at a time, a quivering finger pointed toward Laura's chest.
Get away from my house,
she says. Her voice has the chill of the sea in it, the hiss of sand against rocks.
Get away from my family!
Laura presses her back against the closed car door.
Gran,
Edwin says. In Vera's other hand is a slim metal pipe. She swings it upward until it points at Laura's chest. The other end curves like a shepherd's crook with a small cylinder attached, but it's not until a flame bursts from the tip, hissing toward Laura, that it dawns on me that this is a weed burner, Ralph's stolen propane torch. For a long, breathless moment, the rest of us stand motionless. I can't tear my eyes from the flame. Then Edwin reaches out a hand slowly.
Put it down, Gran. Give it to me.
Vera waves the jet of fire closer to Laura, and the blue flame reaches for the buttons on her cardigan. Laura flattens herself against the car, twisting her face away.
How dare you!
Vera spits the words at Laura.
How dare you come anywhere near my family after all this time! We don't want anything to do with you!
Edwin eases in front of Laura, flinching at the heat, forcing Vera to take a step back. A rasping sound comes from my throat, and Danny grabs my arm as I sway toward Edwin.
I'll take her home now, Edwin says. Gran, we'll go right now. She never needs to come back.
But Vera shakes her head, glaring at him and Laura in turn. She'll try to tell you something in the car. Something not true. I'm not having it.
Alex and Kiara appear in the doorway behind her, and the movement breaks my focus. But Alex pulls Kiara back indoors immediately, reaching into his pocket as he slams the front door shut. Gran, stop it, I say as Danny tugs on my elbow. Let her go home. Vera blinks and then slowly turns to me. The propane torch sinks, and the flame now points toward my shins.
This is all your fault, Seraphine, she says.
My throat constricts.
Don't say that. Everything was fine until you tracked this woman down.
I shake my head.
No, it wasn't. Dad died. It wasn't fine.
Vera lifts her chin.
We're a happy family, aren't we? We're successful. Look at the three of you. You make me proud every day. But that isn't enough for you, is it? Everything I've done, I did it for you three. But you, Seraphine, you just can't see that, can you?
But if the truth, I say. She gives a tight laugh.
I was the one who looked after you, remember? All those long nights after Ruth died. The truth never came into it. You were so young and helpless. Why would it make any difference where you came from?
A shiver runs down my spine. This is the first time my grandmother has acknowledged the possibility of something being amiss, of our identities not being certain. I try to embrace her meaning, that it doesn't matter to her that she loves us anyway. But it's not enough. Her love for us doesn't give her the right to hide the truth from us.
You were ours, she continues. Our children. Oh, I know they said things in the village. I know that. But they missed the point. It doesn't matter. We don't need to know. I don't want to know.
The torch and its flame rise as she talks, but my resentment overrides my fear. You always thought it was me who didn't belong, didn't you? I sway toward her, and she dips the torch away, startled.
All these years, you thought Danny was your real grandchild and I wasn't.
She blinks.
No, it wasn't like that.
I stare at her. She has no idea about Kiara, but I want to understand where her suspicions about Danny and me came from, in case it gives a clue to our true origins.
But you're giving Summerborn to Danny. You're scared of what Laura might tell me.
The flame dips farther. Vera's tone is almost reasonable, almost convincing.
I'm giving Summerborn to Danny, she says, because I want him to settle down. You know I don't like him being away, overseas all the time. I told you I'll buy you your own house, Seraphine, somewhere nearby. I never knew which of you...
She glances at Danny and back to me, starts again.
This way you'll both be here, close, safe.
I stare at her. But I don't know which aspect frustrates me the most. That she doesn't care that my attachment to Summerborn is so much stronger than Danny's.
That she thinks she has the right to manipulate Danny's life choices. That she didn't foresee that Danny would hand the house over to me anyway. She's devoted so much of her life to keeping us safe, and yet so little to actually understanding us.
I grasp at the sentence she failed to finish.
What do you mean? You never knew which of us? I ask her. You mean you doubted both of us?
Vera flinches but holds my gaze.
It's not important, she says. I've never known anything, not for sure. She knew something.
She shoots a look at Laura.
But it's none of her business or anyone else's. You're both my grandchildren, and even if you're not...
She swings the torch back up, back toward Laura's chest. But when she turns her face to me, her expression slides into something close to pleading.
I just didn't know, Seraphine. Ruth told me... I mean, she was ill, of course, confused, but she told me that she'd done something terrible. What? Edwin lurches toward her.
When? Gran, when did she say that?
Vera grimaces.
When I was trying to talk her away from the cliff edge. She was talking nonsense about someone coming to take her baby. I thought she'd become obsessed with the village tales. You know, those awful things they used to whisper. That twins never survived at Summerbourne, one or the other, yes, but never both.
No,
Edwin says, his voice hoarse.
It wasn't that,
I say, but I think only Danny hears me. He grips my arm tighter.
She was confused, Vera says. Hysterical. I tried to persuade her. I tried to pull her away from the edge, but every time I reached out, she...
She shudders.
And she had a moment. Her foot. At the edge. She shoved me away. She said, I've done something terrible, Mother. I couldn't. I didn't ask her. It was too late. She stepped back.
Edwin groans and curls over. Danny's grip on my arm is tighter than ever. The torch sways, and for a moment I think she's going to turn it off, that it's all over. But when she speaks again, her voice is harsh.
It didn't matter after that whether one of you had come from somewhere else. And it doesn't matter now. We're fine as we are. That's why I have to get rid of this woman.
Vera raises the torch and swings it at Laura, and the flame roars louder.
She wants to break our family apart, and I won't let her.
Laura screams as the flame singes the fabric of her cardigan.
Gran!
Edwin grabs for Vera's arm, but Vera swings the torch toward him, and he stumbles back. Laura lifts a flap of smoking fabric away from her body with trembling fingers. A car door slams in the lane behind us. Vera jabs the torch at Edwin to keep him back, and then swings it in a wild arc toward Laura's face. As Laura raises her arm, a deep voice calls out from the lane behind us.
Vera Blackwood?
The torch sways inches from Laura's bandage and her hair. Vera's focus jumps to a spot behind us. Danny and I hold on to each other, and I keep my gaze fixed on the flame.
Martin?
Vera says. The steady crunch of gravel comes closer, and Martin Larch brushes past me, stopping in front of Vera.
Ah, Mrs. Blackwood,
he says. He looks around at the scene as if he has all the time in the world.
This is a funny old thing, eh?
Vera lowers the torch slowly, and finally, I feel I can breathe again. Martin beams at Vera benignly.
Well, now, this reminds me a bit of that day you caught me and Billy Bradshaw fighting out by the boat sheds all those years ago. Do you remember?
Vera's pupils are enormous. She nods slowly.
16 we were, me and Billy. Remember what you said to me?
Violence never solves anything, Martin Larch, you said. Vera stares at him. The flame droops to the gravel where the stones shimmer and crackle.
And you found me that Saturday job, Mrs. Blackwood, and made me go back to school.
I'll never forget your kindness. Martin reaches out slowly with his broad hand.
Now let me return the favour.
Let me take that now, eh?
And we can go and sit down and have a little chat.
For a long moment, I'm not sure whether she's heard him. Then she sighs. She flicks the switch to turn the flame off. And he takes the contraption from her. Martin turns to look at someone behind us.
They on their way?
Edwin, Danny and I twist around, and Joel is there walking calmly up the drive, his phone in his hand.
Any minute,
Joel says. Nothing is quite in focus. Next to me, Danny hunches over suddenly as if he might be sick. and then stays in that position, hands on knees. I try to step sideways but stumble, and then Joel is right next to me, catching me by the elbow. Edwin has gone across to Laura, who still leans against the car door, her face a sickly greenish colour. Martin takes Vera by the arm and leads her toward the end of the drive, but she appears to have second thoughts.
Actually, I'll stay here, thank you, Martin. You can take the weed burner, but I'll stay here.
Mrs. Blackwood, we need to ask you a few questions, Martin says.
Vera draws herself up.
There's no need, Martin. Everything's fine.
Can you tell me why you asked Ralph Luckhurst to collect you from King's Lynn Station and drop you off at the boatyard yesterday morning, Mrs. Blackwood?
There's a sharpness in Martin's tone that wasn't there a moment ago.
And then asked him to collect you from the boatyard again a couple of hours later.
I give my head a small shake. What's Martin going on about?
That's none of your business, Vera says, her chin high.
Can you explain why there are traces of gunpowder on the passenger seat of Mr. Luckhurst's van, Mrs. Blackwood? The same type of gunpowder we found on the block of stone that was loosened from the wall of the Folly parapet and dropped onto Miss Silveira's head yesterday. I imagine it'd be pretty hard to climb up so close to that cannon without getting some of the old gunpowder on your hands.
I can't take this in. I feel like I'm two steps behind. Ralph Luckhurst, my grandmother's greatest fan, her loyal ally. A link between Laura's attacker and Ralph's van. Is this all his doing?
Don't be ridiculous,
Vera tells Martin, but her face pales.
Can you explain why a letter requesting Miss Silveira's presence at the Folly yesterday matches a letter found in Mr. Luckhurst's van concerning his sister Daisy's interview at the bakery? Same paper, same ink, same font. The note in the van was signed by you, Mrs. Blackwood. Will we find your fingerprints on both letters, do you think?
The remaining colour drains from Vera's face. I sway backward, and Joel catches me under my elbows. Vera sags, slowly crumpling into a shrunken version of herself, her head bowed. I see Edwin flinch, but he stays where he is. He doesn't go to her.
Gran?
Edwin says.
You didn't write that note.
Vera shivers briefly. She doesn't raise her eyes.
I just wanted to talk to her, she says eventually, to persuade her not to get involved. I might have leaned against a loose stone while I was waiting for her. It wasn't deliberate.
Laura raises trembling fingers to the bandage around her head, staring at Vera with an expression of disbelief. Martin makes a sound in his throat.
Another question for you, Mrs. Blackwood. When I spoke with you after your son-in-law Dominic's accident...
He articulates the word with careful emphasis. Axe-i-dent.
When I asked you where you were that morning, why did you fail to mention that Mr. Luckhurst had driven you here to Summerbourne from the station? Mr. Luckhurst tells me that when he came back to collect you, you were exchanging crosswords with Dominic here on the driveway. You sent Mr. Luckhurst away again, and later called him to pick you up from the boatyard.
Martin's words rattle inside my head, louder and louder. Ralph drove Vera here. Vera and Dad had an argument before Dad's accident.
No,
Edwin says.
Gran?
No.
Vera's voice is small, distant. I knew it would look bad. That's why I didn't tell you. Her head sinks as she talks, and she doesn't seem to notice Laura straightening up and stepping forward. A bubble of noise, halfway between a laugh and a cry, escapes from Laura's throat.
"And you tried to make out that I was the threat," Laura says.
Vera's head jerks up. The two women stare at each other, and then Vera deliberately turns her head away, her expression tight with contempt.
"I can assure you, Martin," Vera says. "Dominic was fine when I left him. My mind is still scrambling to catch up." Martin takes a deep breath.
"Vera Blackwood," Martin says, "I am arresting you on suspicion of the attempted murder of Laura Silveira."
I sway backward. The sunlight is so bright I can barely see him.
"And also on suspicion of the murder of Dominic Mays,"
Martin continues. I try to draw a breath, but the air's too thick, my throat too narrow.
"And also, based on old evidence reviewed last night," Martin says, "on suspicion of the murder of your daughter, Ruth Mays, in 1992.
A voice says, "No." I think it must be Edwin. Joel holds on to me. The world sways around us.
"You do not have to say anything," Martin says. "But it may harm your defence if you do not mention when questioned something which you later rely on in court. Anything you do say may be given in evidence."
My knees buckle, and I leave.